this week's sportscaster. On the line from Palmerston North, the home of the mighty Manawatu Turbos, Peter Lamp. Kia ora, Peter. Welcome back to Knights.
Thanks, Brian. Yeah, not so mighty this year, but anyway, we carry on. And I've had enough of the weather.
You've had enough? Really?
Well, it just comes over in these bombs, like bombing raids, Lancaster bombers flying over or something. And whack, we had hail and heavy rain just an hour or so ago.
Yes, I like your description. It is a bit like that, you know. One moment it's reasonably calm, maybe even sunny. The next moment, yes, it's all hell again.
Yes, obviously coming from the Southern Ocean, well, they can keep it down there. There's no one lives there anyway.
No, too late now, Peter, too late. We're just going to have to suck it up or just, you know, stay out and wait for it to clear. So the Turbos are not, now that's the men's provincial team, not doing so well this year. Peter?
No, there's only been three games, but they've lost a lot and they've shipped a few points. They shipped 50 against Auckland at Eden Park on Sunday, and Auckland didn't have six All Blacks, so that's a little bit of a concern. So they're going to have to hunker down and get their act together. Last year they lost their first four, and then Nani Lamapi came back and steered them to about four wins, I think. But unfortunately he's injured and will probably play for them later on. That's the All Blacks' second five. But he's just mending his arm that he sort of fractured during the Super Rugby competition.
Have you been paying attention to the Ranfurly Shield, which used to be a really, 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 really big thing in New Zealand rugby? I barely registered that it had moved from Canterbury to where? Taranaki. And before that had really set in, it had moved again.
Well, what have you been doing, Brian?
Wow.
You must have been sort of trying to find out or something.
I was doing other sport, actually. This mic shot you, but on Saturday morning it was football, and then Saturday afternoon it was spring training for the cricket.
Oh, fair enough. Everyone's on their own, but funnily enough, the Sky are now, they've got rid of the Thursday game in the Mitre 10 Cup, which was horrible anyway. It was usually grotty weather. So they double up two games. They have two games on concurrently on different channels. So I was, of course, watching Manawatu Turbos because I usually have to write a few words about them. And but on the other channel was the Ranfurly Shield game at Inglewood, where Taranaki are playing. And so I didn't get to see that, but I did know that they'd lost the Shield to Otago, who are not, you wouldn't say one of the greatest sides out, but they get the job done, and good on them. So Taranaki won it with the Barrett brothers, won the Shield off Canterbury the previous week, and then have lost it without the Barrett brothers, and now Otago take it down to the deep south, and have got to defend it against Hawke's Bay, who knocked over Canterbury on Saturday as well in the last second with one of those rolling maul tries of a penalty in a line-out. So the thing's made sort of round to go around, isn't it? Even though it's usually it stays somewhere like Canterbury or something for some time, but this is good, I think, that it's going around. And I think there's still plenty of fervour about the thing in rugby circles.
Still a bit of Shield fever, you reckon?
Yeah, I think there is. Well, you only got to see the reaction of the teams when they win it. And if Hawke's Bay wins, well, then there'll be, I think, that Northland get a challenge, and then if they beat them, well, then there's Manawatu.
I was coming to that. Will you get a go? If so, hang on. If Hawke's Bay win, if they take it off Otago, then you might be in line if Northland don't beat Hawke's Bay.
That's right, yeah. But don't talk about Manawatu's record at Napier, please, Brian. I don't like to talk about it.
Okay, I assume it's lousy.
Yeah,
hey, but now, the women's provincial team, though, from Manawatu has been, well, I did catch a game they were playing, and they were absolutely hammering a side by about 80, 90 points. So yeah, I assume they're doing better than the men this year.
They are, but it's different. It is different. But anyway, because the competition is so unbalanced. I mean, they beat Tasman, I think it was 88-0 or something. And then they beat Wellington at the weekend, yes. So they're going okay, but it's a little bit different, and a lot of the unions are not very strong, and yet there are some strong unions. So that's just the way it is. Well, that part of the game grows.
I'm assuming that Manawatu is fortunate enough to have a strong women's team then.
Well, they've been at women's rugby for a long time, and they've always had a core of New Zealand players such as Silika Winiata. So, and there's always been two strong clubs in Manawatu and a few other weaker ones. That's the way it is with the women's game.
And those two strong clubs, I guess it's competition, so they try to best each other, and that makes for match fit players.
Yeah, it's Kia Tower and Fielding Old Boys Orua are the two strong women's teams.
But that's interesting. I've sometimes wondered about this, having a women's team called Old Boys. I've come across this before.
Well, it's just the club that they're affiliated to. You've got to play somewhere, Brian. And
well, I know.
You don't
I was
want
just,
them
you
having
know.
Separate... forming separate clubs, they probably wouldn't be able to sustain themselves.
I don't know whether the women would like to be called Fielding Old Girls. I don't know. If there's any women out there listening right now who play rugby, they can send us a text. I'd be curious about that.
Yes, I haven't really thought about this one in depth.
No, I've sprung that on you. I didn't warn you about that, Peter, but you did want to talk about South Africa and Argentina and the Southern Hemisphere Rugby Championship. Why is that?
Well, I just wonder if they should even be there. I mean, both countries have riven with COVID-19. Quite a few of the Pumas have tested positive or had tested positive, and here they are throwing them in with Australia and New Zealand. From a public health point of view, I think it's a bit dodgy. And South Africa haven't even been playing any rugby. They may have just started now, and I don't think Argentina would have either. So... But I understand that, you know, it's all about money. They've got to get these tests underway and try and get some money in the coffers or the unions will go broke. But I think the greater good is the public health.
What COVID, I guess, is showing, which is, I guess, something we already knew, is how important our broadcasting rights, the sale of broadcasting rights, are to funding sport. Because we've just got all these games in front of empty stadiums and we have to have them, we're told, because otherwise the games won't survive financially.
That's what we're told anyway. The NRL is the Rugby League in Australia has sort of got by. They've staggered through a season, and it's probably working out okay for them. But it's just South Africa have had big problems with COVID, and so have Argentina. And I don't know. And I mean, there's going to be a whole New Zealand. I think are going to play. Australia four times or something. They've got the two Bledisloe Cup games in New Zealand, then they go over to Australia and they play them twice as well. So it's the whole thing's going to lose a bit of credibility, I would think.
Would you rather just have some Bledisloe Cup games?
Well, I think I probably would. Yeah, I mean two or maybe three a season, but they're playing all these teams. Each team is playing each other twice in Australia. Before that, there's two tests in New Zealand. And also the All Blacks are now talking about taking 46 players. Well, they've selected 35, which is enormous compared with the old days where 30 players went on tour. They've got 35 and now they're going to have another 11 because if they need backups in a hurry, of course, they can't fly them over because you've got to be six weeks looking at your face in a hotel room. So that's going to further dilute the NPC or the Mitre 10 Cup as well because it's another 11 top players being taken out of it.
What about the issue of the All Blacks being in quarantine and not being able to be back with their families by Christmas?
Well, that seems to be a big deal, yes, I suppose.
Do you think it's a big deal, Peter?
Well, I'm probably a bit old school and you'd probably put up with it from back in the day, but now I think they could easily get them home a day or two earlier to avoid that.
Get them home and still do the 14 days quarantine.
Yes, the players seem to be keen to go ahead. I mean, there was talk that some of them wouldn't be going for maternity reasons, but no one had actually asked the players, and they've all said that they were keen to go.
Tour Aotearoa from Cape Reinga to the Bluff, a cycling pilgrimage. This sounds like an article you might have written, Peter.
Yeah, I did. I just thought it's worth talking about. I wrote a bit of a column about it after talking to some Manawatu guys who did this. It's a 3,000-kilometre bike-packing pilgrimage, pretty much, a bit like the Camino from France to Spain or across Spain. And they do this. It was first organised in 2016 and it's caught on now. And the riders with about 8 kilos of gear in their waterproof bags on the bike set off, and they do about 60 to 80 kilometres a day, starting from up top 90 Mile Beach which is only 90 k's, I understand, and ride all the way down to the South Island. A third of it's off-road and a little bit of it on-road, but a lot of riding on trails and fire breaks, things like that, even up streams occasionally. It sounds great, and they get about 1,000 at a time in season, when the weather's right, of course. And they call it the perfect holiday of eating, sleeping, riding, and discovering new places. Sounds like you, Brian.
Yes, it also sounds like saddle sores.
Yeah, next thing I was going to mention, they have to keep putting, is it chamois cream on their backsides or something?
Yeah.
To prevent those. So that would count me out. 250 hours of riding. But it must be a great adventure for all.
Well, I mean, I have gone on some big cycling holidays. I think the longest was Auckland to Wellington. That was over 2 weeks. It was a long time ago now. I was a teenager back then.
Were you riding on State Highway 1 or were you in...
I did a little bit of State Highway 1. I even went through Palmerston North.
Goodness me.
Didn't stop, though. Well, I did stop to get my bike fixed, but apart from that, I was out of there.
Fair enough.
Now, but why do you want to talk about the braking systems for bikes on Tour de France? Tour de France was won by the other day, and I think it was... I can't remember the names, Peter. Maybe you can help me here. But I understand the person who'd been leading it almost all the way... lost the lead on the second to last stage.
He did. That was nothing to do with the brakes, but that was the two Slovenians of all people. I mean, a tiny wee country, you've got the two top riders in the Tour de France. But anyway, it was Primoz Roglic, I think his name was, had the yellow jersey for most of the thing. Only had to sort of do a decent time in the time trial, but his countryman, Tadej Pogačar, Pogačar, I think it is. He had the time trial of his life, and just screamed past and got enough of a lead, and that was the end of the tour because the last stage is always a procession. And I just hope that it's not the tour is not darkened by anything that they find later. I hope they're all legitimate now, these guys.
Well, what was the thing about disc brakes though, Peter?
The disc brakes was talking to one or two people who were up in the cycling world, came up with some speculation that there was a large number of crashes in the tour this year, and whether it was the introduction of disc brakes for about the second year. Now, the disc brakes, obviously like disc brakes on a car, virtually can have you standing on your head flying over handlebars, as you'd expect, wouldn't you? Whereas some of the other teams are still sticking to the old rim brakes, cable-operated wind brakes on the rim of your tyre, and when water gets in them, that can cause them to not function as they should.
Yeah, I know all about that, Peter.
Yeah. Oh, you've had some experience?
Oh, yeah, riding down to work in the southerly.
Oh, okay. Anyway, the disc brakes come into their own, and two-thirds of the teams have got them now, because they weren't allowed until July 2018, I think. But certainly those perilous downhill descents, such as that by the Swiss guy in two of the stages, Mark Hershey, I think his name is, the commentators made a big thing of saying, luckily he's got disc brakes, because they're more efficient, you can brake a little bit later, and they're going like the clappers. So they seem to be, all the teams will have them eventually, I would think, but the crash part of it comes in is that if someone suddenly brakes with a disc brake in the peloton and the guy behind is on rim brakes, well, he's not going to stop as quickly, is he? So he's going to rear-end the guy in front. So that's the theory that was projected to me, and I just wrote a few words about it.
I just think they'll have to be on the same playing field next time. I mean, I'd rather have the more having disc brakes than the more having little electric motors in the hubs.
Yes.
That's my preference. Yeah. Peter, it's been lovely talking to you again. Good luck with the turbos. Maybe their day will come at some point.
Oh, they usually pull one or two out, so let's hope so. I mean, on Sunday, it was a union of 100,000 people population playing a union of 1 million, so I suppose it puts it in perspective a little bit.
Yes, that's right, Peter. You look on the bright side.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, Peter.
Righto, bye.
Peter Lamp from Palmerston North, back with more sport from a Manawatu perspective in about 6 weeks.